In today's gospel, Christ defends the resurrection of the dead from those who deny it. The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
Reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Some Sadducees, those who deny that there is a resurrection, came forward and put this question to Jesus, saying, "Teacher, Moses wrote to us, if someone's brother dies, leaving a wife but no child, his brother must take the wife and raise up descendants for his brother. Now there were seven brothers. The first married a woman but died childless. Then the second and the third married her, and likewise all seven died childless. Finally, the woman also died. Now at the resurrection, whose wife will that woman be? For all seven had been married to her." Jesus said to them, "The children of this age marry and remarry, but those who are deemed worthy to attain to the coming of age and to the resurrection of the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage. They can no longer die, for they are like angels, and they are the children of God because they are the ones who will rise. That the dead will rise, even Moses made known in the passage about the bush, when he called out, 'Lord, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, and he is not God of the dead, but of the living. For to him all are alive.'" The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
In the Central American country of Guatemala, way up in the mountains of that country, there's a province known as El Quiché. Very poor, rural province, populated mostly by descendants of the indigenous Indian tribe that lived there. As I say, very poor, mostly small villages. Some years ago now, the ruling military junta in Guatemala began to persecute the church, because many priests and nuns at the time were agitating for land reform to give the peasants their own land, and this was not acceptable to the rightist government. So in the particular province of El Quiché, because it was such a rural province and there was so much agitation going on there, the military expelled all the priests and nuns from that area. They closed all the parishes, and they warned the people in those towns that they were not to gather for any religious services any longer. Well, of course, no priests and no nuns, no spiritual leadership, so to speak, left, except there were catechists. The priests and the nuns had, over the years, educated qualified people as catechists. They could be the ones who would teach the people the faith. In this one little town of Santa Rosa, there were five men who had been designated catechists. And what they began to do was that once a month, they would get on their burros and ride down the mountain, a whole day's ride, to the nearest town where there was still a church. And they, with the permission of the local priest, would take consecrated hosts and hide them in their saddlebags, under whatever, bring them back up the mountain. And then, on Sunday, they would gather all the people of the village out in the woods, because the church was boarded up, closed, out in the woods, and they'd have a prayer service, and they'd pass out communion to them, give them the body and blood of the Lord. Well, somehow the army found out about this. They showed up at Santa Rosa, and they arrested the five catechists. And they said to the townspeople, "These five men have defied our orders. They must die. Not only must they die, you must put them to death. you put them to death. And if you don't do this, by tomorrow morning, we're coming back at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. If you don't do it by tomorrow morning, we'll kill all the village. We'll wipe out the whole village. And they left. The army left. So, of course, great turmoil and weeping and wailing in the village. What were they going to do? Some suggested that the catechists should flee into the forest. But they said, if we go into the forest and we escape, they're going to come back there and kill all of you. And they had demanded that they come back that next morning and see the bodies of the five men. So after much discern and discussion, they decided it was better that they die, that everybody else could live. So that night, at 2 o'clock in the morning, the whole village gathered. The five catechists dug their own graves. And then they prayed together, and they received for the last time the body of Christ they had brought back up the mountain. And then, kneeling at the side of their graves, they were put to death by machete by the members of their own families. The army came back the next day, as they promised, 7 o'clock, there they were, saw the bodies. And satisfied that they had handled this problem, they left. But one of the elders of the village later on told someone, "We know that these five men are alive with Christ. We know that. The army thinks that they have broken our spirit, but God sustains our spirit." What an awful thing to go through, huh? Imagine you forced to kill your own husband, your own father, so that the rest of the people could live. What made it possible for these men and these people to go through all that? It was their faith that these men would live forever with Christ, that they would be raised up, that the Christ they had received in communion all those weeks, all those months, would raise them up. Jesus himself says it, doesn't he? "I am the living bread come down from heaven. Whoever eats this bread will live forever." That's what they believed. That's why they were able to go through this. Reminds me a little bit of the seven brothers in the first reading today who went to death because they wouldn't disobey the law of God, believing that they would live again. Now, I share that with you this morning, all that with you this morning, because we now enter into the final weeks of the church year. First Sunday of Advent is coming. We begin a new church year. And every year at the end of the church year, these last 3 weeks of the church year, we are asked to reflect on final things. Final things. We're asked to reflect on our own death, whenever that may be, and on the end of the world, whenever that may be. Final things. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't spend a lot of time thinking about final things. I think if we did too much, we probably would be depressed. But from time to time, it's good for us to remember the end, our own end in this world, and the end of the world itself. It's good for us occasionally to reflect on those things. And you know when I tend to reflect on them the most? There are three times when I tend to reflect on them the most. The first is when I, every once in a while, when I stop to realize how old I am. Now, many of you know that I just celebrated my 80th birthday a few weeks ago. I said to myself, you know, that's like an incomprehensible number, right? 80, my God. But I know it. Every morning when I get out of bed, I know I'm 80. You know, Some of you are laughing because you know what I mean, you know. You have to sit on the edge of the bed a little bit, you know, and stretch a little bit before you can stand up. Just can't do the same things I used to do. I know that. Experience it every day. And what it reminds me of is this, that I have many more days behind me than I have ahead of me. But isn't, I take great consolation and joy in what Jesus says in the gospel today. He reminds the people there. He said, what did God say to Moses in the burning bush? How did God identify himself? God said, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had been dead in this world for a long time, but God identifies them as his, as belonging to him. So even if they're dead in this world, they're alive to him. What a consolation that is for me and for all of us as we face the end. Second time I tend to think about final things, and in this case, more maybe about the end of the world, is when every once in a while I reflect on or I question why the world has to be the way it is. You know, do you ever find yourself looking around, war, violence, Ukraine, Africa, in our own country, children being killed in their schools by people who go in with AK-47s. Why should the world be that way? Why, as we gather here this morning, are there people in this world who are dying from starvation? Even in our own country. Why should the world be that way? Of course, we make the world that way. We make it that way. People. But is that the way God intends it to be? I don't think so. I don't think so. Remember that wonderful song that we oftentimes associate with Judy Garland, Over the Rainbow? Remember that song? Somewhere over the rainbow, skies are blue, and the dreams you dare to dream always will come true. Isn't that, in a sense, a prayer for paradise? Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops, way above the chimney tops. That's where you'll find me. And that's what St. Paul says, you know, in one of his letters. The time will come when there'll be no more weeping, no more pain, no more death, only peace and joy forever. When the Lord comes at the end, this world will become what God means it to be. Then the final time I find myself thinking about last things, so to speak, strangely enough, is when I'm very happy. You know, you've all had those days, just a wonderful day, right? Wonderful day with the family, or a wonderful day at the beach, or maybe a wonderful vacation. And you, as you're experiencing that, you don't want it to end. You want it to go on. You just don't want it to end. But of course it does, in this world. Remember, some of you might know that the singer Neil Diamond years ago had a song. It wasn't one of his big hits, but it was a very poignant song entitled Done Too Soon. In it, he begins by listing in a very staccato, up-tempo way the names of all these famous people throughout history, one name after another, after another, after another. And then the music gets very soft and pensive, and he sings, they, those people, all labored under the same sun. They all looked up in wonder at the same moon, and they all wept when it was done, for being done too soon. Isn't that you and me? Isn't our name included in that list, or will be? We labor under the sun, we look up in wonder at the moon, and no matter how old we are, we weep when it's done, for being done too soon. But that's the point, you see. Happiness in this world, wonderful as it is, will not last here, but it will last forever. Doesn't Jesus say it again? You're mistaken, you who deny the resurrection. And he shows us that in his own resurrection, of course. So you see, even though happiness in this world is limited, someday it won't be limited at all. So as we gather here today, let us think a bit about those final things, our own death, the end of the world. I sometimes think, you know, if I were to take a vote in this church this morning and say to you, if God would abide by a vote we would take, how many would vote for the world coming to an end tomorrow? If we took a popular vote and God said, whatever the result of the vote is, I'll you know, if you want me to end the world today, I'll do it. I wonder how many of us would vote for the end of the world. But if you were living in a refugee camp someplace, if you were watching your baby die in your arms because of starvation, a lack of medicine, if you had your rights denied over and over and over again and no hope of change, would you vote for the coming of the Lord then, I wonder? I think we probably would, wouldn't we? But here's the most important thing. Whether it's our own death or the end of the world as we know it, remember, final things are really not so final at all. All are alive for God. May God bless you.